This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com. This podcast is brought to you by Ants Memory Profiler 5. It offers clear presentation for profiling results so you can find your memory leak within minutes. You can download a free trial copy from the link on our show notes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Herding Code. This is being recorded on August 4th, 2009. We're going to get a little crazy tonight. We're going to turn this podcast up to 11. We've got four people joining us for a conversation tonight, in addition to the four herders. And this kind of started from a conversation that was going on Twitter between Jeremy Miller, Glenn Block, Rob Eisenberg, and Ward Bell. Talking a bit about model view, view model, presentation model, passive view versus MVVM, lots of interesting stuff about presentation patterns. So we wanted to have them on the show to kind of continue the conversation in person. So thanks a lot, guys, for coming on. I would never get it, introductions done properly for all you guys. So why don't we just go around real quick and you just say who you are and give us just a quick update on what you where you're from and what you do. Jeremy, you want to start?
Sure. I'm Jeremy Miller. I'm with Dovetail Software in Austin, Texas, the coolest little ISV in all of Austin. Right now, I'm currently authoring a book on presentation patterns, going very, very slowly, and Ward and Scott and Ward and Rob and Glenn are helping me a great deal on the back channels. So thank you, guys.
All right, I'll go next. I'm Ward Bell. I'm founder of a company in near San Francisco in Emeryville called IdeaBlade. My customers are busily trying to figure out how the heck they're going to use this WPF and Silverlight stuff. And that naturally draws you into the whole view model, et cetera, world. And Jeremy and I crossed paths first working on Prism. And since then, yes, we've been batting the ball back and forth and having a great time.
And I'm Rob Eisenberg, and I work for a company called Blue Spire. And we do a lot of work with user experience and user interface architecture. My big contribution right now, I guess, is a framework I'm working on called Calibrin, which is designed to simplify and point people down the right path when it comes to architecting user interfaces. And I met both Ward and Jeremy, I think, back at the first Prism meeting as well, and have been familiar with these guys through their blogs prior to that.
And hopefully Glenn should be joining us in just a couple of minutes. So the Twitter conversation that started this all was quite an extended back and forth amongst you guys. It ranged over quite a lot of topics. Where do you want to start? I mean, one of the first big things that I saw in the conversation was talking about view first versus view model first development, passive view versus MVVM, all that sort of stuff. So where should we start?
Yeah, I like the view first versus presenter view model first discussion myself.
Okay,
Jeremy, set it up.
Okay, a couple issues here first. So there's two, I think, two very different discussions going on, or maybe they're closely related. So when I'm building a screen, a logical screen in all the pieces, do I logically kind of work by building the screen, building up the view, and then saying, I'm going to let the view model or the presenter drop out of this, let the behavioral aspect of it drop out, and the presenter of the view model is the presenter of the view model just an implementation detail of the view? That's one issue. Versus I've been doing separated presentation for about 5 or 6 years, going all the way back to the crude WinForms world. And in that world, we really like to start with either a supervising controller or even the old-fashioned passive view version of model view presenter. Start with your iView, completely build up your presenter or your view model, flesh out at the iView interface as you go, and then at the last minute, you would actually implement the iView, fire it up, and things generally worked. So there's the preference about how you want to work first. Then the other issue is getting into screen activation. When I load a screen, do I say, put this control in the tab, and then we'll get at the view model and presenter somehow from the view model? Or do we start by saying, or as I would, in more of a presenter-first model, here's this thing, a screen or a presenter, and the presenter will tell you which view to use. So you'll activate by going through the presenter and say something like, activate, set things up, and now give me the user control that I'm going to stuff in a tab somewhere.
So does anybody want to defend the or enunciate the view first position besides me? Not that I espouse it, but I think it deserves its due.
Well, the only thing that I would say is kind of my workflow actually tends to be somewhere in the middle frequently. I'll start by creating a view and a presenter at the same time. And then depending on the, I kind of tend to see where things lead me. Although for the most part, I'm a model first kind of person. I feel that a lot of complex problems when approached from the view first angle get very simple when looked at from the model side of things. But sometimes I will do a little bit more of the prototyping of the UI first and then move and spend a lot of time on the model and then come back to the view, I guess.
So let me give a strong view perspective. This is Ward. In every situation which I've ever sat down with a client, the first thing we do is we sketch. And we start drawing pictures of how the users want to interact. And you see such excitement around things like sketch flow, precisely because there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing about how it is, in some sense, the discovery of what the application is all about and what the model might actually ultimately be kind of comes through teasing out how it is that an audience, the users and the different kinds of users are going to interact with the application. Which is why so much of every project I've ever been with starts there, and then the rest of it is kind of discovered, and the view model is therefore seen as being in support of the interaction that's discovered through the sketching. So I think that's a lot of the inspiration for the people who would hold a view first. There are also some technical reasons why they do it. But let me just toss that out there and see how the rest of you react.
I mean, I certainly agree with that. And we often start by creating prototypes first because I don't think you can really know whether you're even building the right thing, even if you've got a great set of requirements, until you put it in front of the user and you see them respond to it, or you see them say, you know, this doesn't make sense, or what is this supposed to do? So we do that, but I think there's another aspect of this too that Jeremy's talking about, which is not just the workflow, but the architectural approach of what part of the infrastructure is actually in control. Is it the view that decides to create its model, or is it the model that is in control always creating the view? Or lately what we're doing in our applications is using more of a convention-based approach where our underlying infrastructure goes out and finds the pieces and kind of hooks them together. But that generally starts from some originating model, the way that we go.
So I think, again, there's definitely two issues. The issue you're talking about in terms of navigation. But when I say, do I prefer to start with the view first or the presenter first, I am assuming that I have a balsamic view or maybe even a full-blown mock-up of the view. But then when I talk about how am I going as a developer, just feature by feature or even really smaller, user story by user story, how am I going to work on that feature? Am I going to wire up stuff to the view and make that define and drop out the view model or presenter? Or am I going to sit down and say, or as I actually prefer to do, these are the interactions, the behavioral aspects of the screen. I'm going to drive that with test-driven development through the presenter or the view model, define my contract for the view, and then at the last minute, wire up that contract to the view and fire up the screen.
So I think part of the difference is that when you're working with Balsamic, those are just mock-ups. But, you know, the prevailing winds of where things, you know, where the things are moving with products like Blend is where it's not just a mock-up, but where the actual screens themselves are being maintained by a designer. And a lot of these questions of, you know, who creates who first really come in with regards to how do I support this kind of tooling experience? And the trade-offs are, you know, still wanting to gain maintainability and testability, et cetera. And I think so far what we've found is that by, you know, at least with experience from what I've seen, is that when you go with a view model first approach, of course, it's extremely testable, but you basically end up with getting yourself in a situation where it's tough from a tooling perspective to get the designer to be able to function. And with a view-first approach, you know, because of some of the things that Blend supports, like the rich data binding type support and things, you can do like what Jonas Faloso showed at NDC, which is actually having, you know, like a service locator behind the scenes that a different one is used at runtime versus what's used at design time, but it allows the designer to function. And the views to function in an environment like Blend.
Do you really need to go to that kind of level, though, faking in a service locator from the view? Am I the only person that thinks it just sounds so very wrong? Why can't I simply stuff in a fake dummy view model just for the data bag for the designer and keep the view completely ignorant of things like service location? I certainly do not want a service locator or a full-blown IOC container getting bootstrapped every time some designer guy needs to load a screen up into a UI. That sounds slow and it sounds brittle.
Well, actually, the approach that Jonas was showing is you wouldn't have an IOC container at design time. The IOC container would only be there at runtime. And then that's just one approach. I'm not actually saying whether or not that approach is a good approach or not. But it's really more of thinking about that designer workflow and how the designer fits in and what are the kind of trade-offs that need to be made. Now, to be fair, I think, and we found this when we were doing Prism for Patterns and Practices, that there's not a lot of designers out there yet, right? So it's like we're talking about this kind of fictitious thing. But the momentum is starting to build for companies that want to use third-party designers and such. I think that a lot of these questions of view model first or view first, at least from my perception, really have to do with whether or not you have a designer in-house or even you have developers that are using Blend, but they're trying to take advantage of some of those capabilities.
I kind of disagree with that to a certain extent. I mean, one of the things that I said, like I said earlier, that we're doing now is we're using some simple conventions to, I mean, a couple years ago when we went down this path, we were actually using containers, Windsor, to inject things directly into our views. And we haven't done that in about a year now. We found that there's some simpler ways to put these pieces together. And one of the things we do is we use some conventions around naming of views and view models. And I think that you can teach a designer, you know, these simple conventions. There's really not much to it. You know, it's called toolbar view model and toolbar view. And, you know, here's the pieces that go together. You can look, you can see here's the actions and properties available. I mean, I actually really think that you can teach somebody these kinds of things, even if they're not very savvy in the coding sense. And I don't think that has to dictate whether you choose to go with a model-first approach or a view-first approach.
But what do you see is a question. What do you see as a designer? Like, I mean, the challenge, can the designer open that view up in Blend and do what they need to do if the view model is the guy who's responsible for injecting that view into itself?
Well, what do you see? I mean, what do you see as something that's preventing them from being able to do that? I mean, I don't really see too much of a
well, if the view, well, there's no code that's executing for one thing when you're going into Blend. So if the view model is creating the view through injection, then that means that the view is not going to have any view model. I mean, you have the test data that Blend has.
So, I mean, you're basically saying the biggest problem is that they don't have actual sample data to see in the designer the binded state of. Is that a correct explanation?
I think it is about the designer being limited by not having the view model in play. I mean, there's Blend has the design time data features, but the design time beta feature really doesn't cover all the different aspects of what a view model can cover. And part of this is also going off of, like, I know when we were doing Prism, for example, there were a bunch of issues of there were some things we could do in Blend, there were some things we couldn't, but we were really developers. We didn't have that kind of where the designer was just arbitrarily creating screens. I think that's where you run into problems, and that's what Jonas saw. Like, Jonas started off, I believe, using kind of a view model first approach. And he had his girlfriend who was being the designer. Now, of course, it's a little bit of a fictitious thing, but she actually is a designer. And he ran into these issues that without being able to go view first, he couldn't find a good experience to allow her to function. I think in general, there's been a sentiment that, you know, that the the things that drive one to do Vue first are to make it more friendly for tooling. Now, maybe there's things we could do in the tooling in the future that wouldn't require that. But today, my understanding, and some of it is not firsthand, is that there are serious problems when you try to go Vue model first in terms of supporting that design experience.
Right. And that's definitely something in our group and the work that we do at Vertigo, that a lot of the drive has for MVVM has been more from the tooling and design side. And partly that's from a lot of the applications are maybe not as complex from a business rules point of view, or from, you know, the actual model and services, et cetera, can be pretty simple. But there's a huge push for, you know, not just having the designers send off some Photoshop mockups or Balsamiq or whatever, but actually continue to work in Blend and work with the team. Now that we've got that in place, obviously we're working on some of the other advantages, you know, and testability, et cetera. But that's been one of the biggest ways to actually sell this, is saying, well, this is blendable. And that's actually been, you know, people say, well, is this SAML blendable, or is this application blendable?
So I want to take the Blend and the toolability angle from a different way. I think Blend driving our workflow to some degree is the tail wagging the dog. So I'll grant you there are some applications that maybe do not have very complicated behavior. I think John was alluding to this, where, okay, let's say the appearance, the look and the feel and the prettiness is the most challenging part of the application. I guess maybe that does explain some drive for Vue first. But if I'm building, say, a trade entry application, something with very complex behavior, where the look and feel, it's line of business, it's text box and dropdowns, but there's an extreme amount of behavioral aspects. I'm trying to make the application pick data ahead of time, every possible way to make the data entry go faster. In that kind of case, I want to be going to either Vue model first or presenter first. Something that is more aligned towards driving the behavioral aspects of the screen, again, through test-driven development kind of specification. And in that case, I think that's the more challenging situation all the way around.
So I want to jump on that for a second, because I think one of the things we're getting here is, and we need to probably clarify, you know, having the Vue be created first as part of the instantiation doesn't, to me, in any way correlate to whether or not the Vue model drives the behavior from that point on. We're really just talking about at the time of instantiation. We had that big debate over Twitter, but I mean, I don't think that either impacts testability. I can design my Vue models as you know, to control the behavior and drive everything. Really, what I'm talking about when I say Vue first is only at the point of activation. Does the Vue get injected into the Vue model, or does the Vue model get set into the Vue? But once that happens, I think most people out there who are doing Vue model will agree that the Vue model is the guy who's in control. And also, somebody said about Blend, you know, driving the requirements, or you driving the workflow. I agree. I mean, you know, Vue model is about separation of concerns. It's about testability. It's about maintainability. And we've also added in this thing of, ooh, it helps to support the designer developer workflow, but it doesn't do that and knock out everything else that's been done. You know, all the other concerns. Those other concerns are equally valid. It's just a slight shift of saying, and we want to think about doing it in a way that also supports the designer.
I want to add a few minor comments to that, because the screen activation pattern there is important. Do I say, here is this new user control, stuff it in, and the user control will bootstrap itself and bootstrap the Vue model, or do I pass it something else, some non-visual piece, a presenter, a Vue model, what I call a screen activator? And I think that's a very important architectural decision. There are a lot of times when you have logic that needs to happen before a Vue gets activated. You might even want to substitute out which exact Vue you use. So rather than saying, here, activate this user control, there's a lot of value in saying, no, activate this new presenter. And that new presenter will tell you what Vue to use. That new presenter might even say, you can't even go into me. Maybe when you activate the invoice screen, you really basically show a completely different Vue if it's a manager, a high-level manager versus a peon. Or maybe you try to activate an edit view for an invoice screen. But before you really allow the user to edit, maybe you're making them do some kind of pessimistic lock. Like only one user in the entire world can be editing this invoice at one time. So there's actually some on entry type of logic that may stop the screen activation. So a lot of these kinds of scenarios, more complicated scenarios, I think are easier to do with a more view model first or presenter first navigation style. And especially when you're talking about, I may do presentation chooser where I'm swapping out the view.
So let me ask you a question about that, Jeremy. I'm not a big fan of the view determining the view model or the view model necessarily to determining the view. You seem to be arguing that the presenter might select its view as part of a screen activation moment. And I certainly understand why you might need to prep some stuff before you could display anything. But is it really important that the assembly of the two parts be done either by the view or the view model? Couldn't one have something, a factory that pulls the right parts and pieces together and sequences them?
Oh, sure. And I think you're leading into something. So you know, we've been talking, Ward and I and Glenn, all of us have been talking back and forth. We've kind of identified a role called the screen activator. That's just the role for, I want to start a screen. The screen activator puts it together, whatever it is. And the screen activator also takes it all away as soon as it's done. The screen activator role could be its own class in the case of a complicated screen. Most likely, and what I see in Caliburn, if Rob wants to take over in a minute, Caliburn calls it iPresenter. I generally put it on the presenter most of the time, but for really simplistic screens, I'll put that role on the view itself and be just fine. But I would never want to depend on a user control concretion to do that, or I would never want to just say, go stuff this user control in a region somewhere. Something has to kind of be a gatekeeper in front of that at all times.
Yeah, but you can still do resolution. I mean, you can still have a locator or somebody, I think what Ward was hitting at, you can still have some kind of factory that's responsible where I may go with an interface, it does the marriage. I mean, it still doesn't predicate the fact. I get your point about you may have some pre-logic, you may have some logic that determines whether or not that view is allowed to show. I'm still not seeing how those are not achievable using this
with
kind
the view
of
first
model.
What if you want to, you don't want to depend on a concrete, putting in a concrete user control. That gives you no control.
I have an interface. I have an interface, though.
That's what I've been trying to say, Glenn.
I agree. Oh, so I'm totally agreeable to having interface for the view. I don't have any issue there.
Well, I'll just jump in and talk a little bit about the approach that I take with Caliburn, which I think I'm discovering is a little bit different than what the rest of the world is doing. And the way I tend to approach it is my view models are always in a hierarchy. So every view model that comes into existence is created by a parent view model. So Jeremy, when you're talking about screen activators and such and how that corresponds to my iPresenter interface, there are different kind of incarnations of that iPresenter. And some, their purpose is simply to manage others. And so what I end up with is at the startup and app of the application, I just create a single root view model. And from that, all the child view models that represent the entire structure of the application start assembling themselves, composing themselves, basically. And I use something I call iView Strategy, which is a pluggable service that as those view models come into existence, goes out and finds corresponding views and hooks them up in a parallel hierarchical structure to the view models. So what I end up with is two parallel models, one that represents the entire runtime state of the app through a view model hierarchy, and the other that is the entire runtime visualization, which is the views. So my screen activators and my screens or presenters are very similar because they exist in a composite pattern, basically.
Sure. I love the way you're doing that. I mean, that's awesome. I have a question though. As far as your environment and the whole designer developer question, can you describe a bit about the workflow? And are there designers working on this? And what's the interaction? And
our primary designer is a dev designer right now.
Okay.
So he's a pretty good developer as well. We have worked with actual external shops who were the primary designer, knew nothing about C# whatsoever. And what we typically would have them do is build out the entire user interface in Blend, and then we would come back.
Convert it.
We would break it up into the appropriate views and so forth, and we would marry it to our view models. And that's really not too much work, or it wasn't in that case at least. So
this is Ward chiming in for you, Rob. You know, I'm really intrigued by what you're doing, and I'm really looking forward to breaking open Caliburn and checking it out. Let me tell you what my misgivings are, and maybe you can respond to them. There's certainly a nice simplicity in having a tree of view models and you know, maybe a forest of trees. But the thing that gets me is that there's a lot going on there. I tend to think of a view model as simply supporting a view versus the role of something else whose job is assembling and coordinating multiple views. Here, when I say view, I mean now the whole complex of view and view model. So let me see if I can say that more clearly. It strikes me that in giving the view model both the job of driving a view and of organizing its child views and communicating up and down through the tree of views, that there is perhaps too much going on there that I might get confused about that. So I wonder if you could talk about that risk and how you've mitigated it.
In practical applications of it, the responsibilities rarely merge between the class that's actually managing versus the one that's your typical view model. The interesting part about it is that they all implement a similar interface that allows them to be composed together. So one of my view models that's managing, that's typically pretty much all it does. It doesn't take on any other roles of hosting properties, or if it allows commands or actions to be executed on it, those are normally directly related to the management of its children.
So you see what I'm driving at there, Rob, when I say, well, geez, if you have a thing called a view model, but it's only doing coordinating functions, and another thing that's also called a view model, but it's actually driving views, that I, as somebody who would be like to adopt your pattern, may be confused by calling them the same thing.
And I really struggled coming up with names for them back when I named them. What they're actually called in the framework is presenter, and then I have a presenter manager, and then I have something called a multi-presenter manager, and there's a few variations that represent different behaviors for how the children are managed. So in the framework, I actually don't call them just view models. They're distinct different classes with names, and I really struggled trying to figure out what to call them, but
The problem, we've got a nomenclature problem, because they're not really presenters in the classic model view presenter architecture either.
No, they're not.
And view model, Ward has a good point that there's a lot of different roles happening in that node there. To me, I'm kind of seeing each node and each leaf level in Caliburn is almost a completely self-contained application shell with an application controller and all the normal roles.
Yes. And the worry I have about that is, you know, and I kind of mentioned it in the chat, is just complexity. Like, I remember that, you know, CAB had this whole work item hierarchy thing, and it was very hard to diagnose and figure out what was going on. I mean, one of the simplicities we really liked about the event aggregator type approach.
Glenn, be nice. I don't think Rob is actually reproducing
that. I'm not saying he's reproducing CAB. Okay, so that was unfair. It was not comparing to CAB. What I was saying was the hierarchy type, you know, constructs and having to, you know, debug things throughout hierarchies is very difficult to follow. And one of the things that I thought was really simple about the event aggregator approach is that it breaks having to really manage that entire hierarchy, because, you know, it's just about messages and pub sub type things. And it's just simpler to grok the brain around.
If I could just defend myself against the CAB a little bit. No offense taken, really, but it's actually none meant, by the way.
None meant.
it's actually really simple, believe it or not. I need to get some code samples up showing people how this works. It's actually very simple. And in reality, when you're building these things, you don't hold the whole hierarchy in your mind and think about it. You, as Jeremy said, it's almost like a localized application controller with all the various roles represented by several different classes. And so all those pieces are there and I use them in those ways. It just so happens that those set of classes are also hooked into a larger structure. And that structure tends to mirror the logical structure of the entire UI. So to give an example, if you take something like Visual Studio and you think of, okay, there's a shell, there's a solution explorer maybe on the right, an output window on the bottom, and maybe multiple tabs open with different documents. I would have a shell view model, and attached as a property hanging off of that, there would be a solution explorer view model, an output view model, and a document manager view model. But that document manager view model would itself, it's really just the screen coordinator class, okay? And it has child view models, each representing one for each tab. And really, you don't have to think about the whole structure. It's designed in a composite way. So if I'm writing the C# code editor view model, if you will, that's the only thing I have to think about. And it just kind of plugs in. It's the pluggability point is the document manager. And so I tend to create view models and structures that represent almost what you see structurally on the screen, but not necessarily a one-to-one. But believe it or not, it tends to be really simple, and we don't run into the types of issues that people ran in with CAB. That's the short answer.
I can speak to that a little bit, and there's something I want to ask Rob in a minute. So one of the things CAB struggled with as well is the communication across pieces. Was through those weak strings in the attributes that made the CAB code very, very difficult to follow. The composite view pattern that Caliburn is doing is at least as strongly typed and relatively easy to follow with something like ReSharper. What I would say is that this kind of composite view where the application is kind of composed almost of sub-applications, I think would probably be a strong contender if you had to create some kind of dashboard application where a part of the screen is almost acting as a little application in and of itself. Like I've seen this on an application where we had a big complicated composite view, you know, presenter, which had presenters for each piece of its screen and all the way down. There was a lot of private conversation just within that screen itself. It was almost like we had an event aggregator that only broadcast to the pieces within each leaf of the composite and down. So I like that approach for that kind of dashboardy feeling. But most of the applications I've built have been in that kind of tabbed MDI type of layout with a lot of stuff around the edge of the shell. Menus, explorer panes on the left, status bar on the right. And there I like having the event aggregator for cross-piece communication. Like if you're needing to communicate a lot between leaves down and inside of this composite model, then I really don't like communicating through the composite. I'd rather have an event aggregator flowing through the entire app where it's easy to talk from one piece to another.
Exactly. That's my same point, is just that, you know, like as far as what you just described, I mean, that's why we build composite UIs. They are going to have that structure of views and views and views. But when I debug stuff, do I have to follow it at that level? The beauty of event aggregator, I mean, you can still do levels of scoping because you can make your messages have parameters that target the specific context, right? Because normally, if I have a hierarchy, you're going to have it like maybe relating to a specific order. I've got a specific order open. So I may want to say that messages that are coming in, they only care about those messages for a specific order. Well, I can still do that without imposing a hierarchy by just having some kind of context key like order number and just make sure the messages carry that and those people that care about it will get it. And I think you can use messaging and you know, we've had this whole conversation recently about event aggregator and, you know, things we could have done differently with Prism and did we really need an event and args? And I'm now seeing the value of that. But anyway, I just think it's all about just making life easier to follow the logic, really.
Just to say again, because I think it's probably quite different the way I'm doing things, but when I'm talking about these composite structures, I don't try and communicate up multiple levels of these hierarchies. I don't try to use this technique to communicate between leaf nodes or anything like that. I keep the communication pretty local, parent to child, child to parent at the most. And so I would not hesitate to use an event aggregator for these other types of scenarios. But what I find is that there's actually a healthy amount of scenarios where looking at it as a small composite structure within a larger framework, just focusing in on that small structure actually makes things quite a bit simple. And a lot of applications are built of these small pieces. So I'll handle the communication that way. But if we're talking about how am I going to get to the toolbar service that's 10 nodes up in the tree, then I'll use injection to make sure that's injected into the view model, or I'll use an event aggregator to publish information. I mean, so I use a lot of different techniques. The hierarchy fits well because I find often that there are these little pieces of the tree that need to be kind of pretty highly cohesive pieces. And so it simplifies the development of those parts.
So then, Rob, but then anyone else, how are you, like, in the simple case of navigating between two tabs? Say I've got, you know, five tabs in my UI, and I've got, and so I click, user clicks on tab number three. Is this, are you, you know, going through publishing, event aggregation, publishing an event? Are you, you know, commanding? I mean, what's your architecture or your pattern for transitions?
So I've actually done it all three ways you just mentioned, but the way I typically do it now is I have a class, very much like the screen activator type class, that has the understanding that it has multiple child nodes, but only one of them is active at any given time. And so when you click on a tab, it knows that it needs to deactivate the previous model, go find this other model that's the next one, activate it, and of course the views will be hooked up. So, and a bunch of us have kind of talked about the notion of state machines within these patterns, and so it's a lot like a state machine where you're having transitions into and out of the states, and we know what the current state of the app is, and that current state has behavior. So that's how I'm kind of doing it now. If I have multiple tabbed interface, I'm thinking of there's some manager or coordinator class that's the parent node, and each of those childs, it knows which one of them is active, and it manages the lifecycle of activating the previous one, or deactivating the previous one, activating the next one, making sure that sequence and behavior is guaranteed, basically.
So the role and the pattern that Rob is talking about there, right now I think serverless have spontaneously started to call that the screen conductor role or the screen conductor pattern. It's a central point of navigation. Everybody who wants to activate a new screen on the tab or the tab itself catches the I want to change event, it goes and runs through the screen conductor. And the screen conductor can run all of the workflow between deactivating the previous screen and activating the new screen. Plus, there may be logic as you try to remove a tab. You know, we got the constant, well, what if the user has unsaved changes, right? We want to throw that nagging message up and do you want to close down or not, which possibly cancels the close action. That happens from the screen conductor. Plus, as well as giving each individual screen a chance to start up services or polling services or latch themselves if they're going to be inactive. A lot of things you can do if you'll run all of the screen navigation through a central point.
You know, some of the things that we've identified that a lot of our classes have is an initialize method, an activate, a deactivate, and a shutdown. Those are a number of things that we find. The really interesting piece we also have is the notion of some method called can shutdown. And I think a lot of the biggest complexity that we've seen with life cycles and activations is what happens when someone says, no, sorry, you can't shut down. And I think there's some really interesting stuff there and some real interesting challenges around that. I'd love to hear what everybody else is doing. I can share more about what I'm doing, but I don't want to hog here.
I don't think it has to be that bad. It's simply a matter of the screen conductor, when it wants to shut down a screen, it asks that. I call it can close. What did you call it, Rob?
Can shut down.
Okay. So can shut down or can close. The screen conductor calls can close. And yeah, I do kind of traditional humble dialogue box. If my screen has to do the, if it's dirty, throw the nagging screen up, I would actually go through some kind of iMessage box creator, pure old-fashioned humble dialogue box. But either way, the screen has to return a Boolean value of true or false on that can close. And if can close is false, you don't close the screen, period. You stop and short circuit the screen activation logic. And other applications, we've actually made the, when you try to close a screen, the head dirty changes and the user said, no, I don't want to close this. You go and you actually activate that tab so you can point the user where there's unsaved work. But that's the most complex I've ever seen. I was just going to share a little story on a project years ago when this stuff was in its infancy and we were still trying to do passive view because we didn't know any better. We got on a project where we had a lot of spaghetti code logic about it was a project using the one screen at a time web navigation model. If data isn't saved and they're trying to go into edit mode or back into view mode, we warn them. But if not, and we just had an explosion of if then logic. We went to a model instead where you pull a layer super type out against every screen that has this kind of can close, can enter type methods on it. And once you did that, the workflow between activating and deactivating a screen is always the same. The steps about how a single screen determines whether it can be entered or exit are different. So come up with some kind of what we're now calling a screen activator interface, some kind of interface that expresses this role of starting or stopping an individual screen. And then the screen conductor can work with all of these screen activators in the exact same way.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, really similar to what we're doing. And I've found that the same patterns tend to work across a wide range of projects as far as that goes. And it really, really simplifies dealing with these issues. I wanted to say a little bit about the shutdown stuff, because one of the problems we've had in the past is that sometimes that can shutdown method ends up being a little bit too complicated when you start throwing in not only the dirty checking, but if it's dirty, we want to throw up this dialogue and we want to get the user's response and we want to process that. And then we want to say whether we can actually shut down. We found that there were certain scenarios where that actually got quite complicated. And so what we ended up doing is sort of breaking the shutdown to kind of a multi-phase shutdown. So what we would do is we would say, first, can you shut down? And it would return a plain old Boolean based on whether it could shut down without any user response whatsoever. And then if it said no, we would then look for a special interface, which I call I support custom shutdown, for lack of a better name. And then we would go through sort of a multi-phase shutdown where we would say, okay, presenter, tell us why so that we can give the user some feedback. And then once we do that, let's reprocess whether we can shut down again. And that's something that we saw simplified the model when it got kind of complicated like that.
So I'm just going to jump in to, I guess one question I have is to give clarity to people on the call. Let's kind of paint a quick picture of what the players look like. So you've got this screen conductor. It's going to have a collection of screens. It's going to be the guy who handles activation, deactivation, etc. If my screen wants a close, he's going to go to the screen conductor and ask him if he can close, or he's going to try to close, and then the screen conductor is going to get a callback. Can you give a picture of...
Okay, so the screen conductor. Let's take a very simple example. I know not many people build these apps, but maybe with Silverlight, they're going to be more common. I'm building a web-style navigation flow where only one screen is active at a time. No tabs, no nothing, just one screen at a time. I'm in the edit screen and I want to cancel my changes or I want to go do something completely off. So in a menu selection, I say, I want to go make this other completely other screen active. So that message gets sent to the screen conductor. I want to make this new screen active. The screen conductor is first going to go to the active screen, this edit screen that's dirty, and ask it, can you close? And the edit screen is going to pop, is internally itself is going to generate the message box, hey, you've got unsafe changes, do you want to close? The user says no, so the can close method returns false over to the screen conductor. So the screen conductor will then short circuit and stop the screen activation and cancel the activation of the other screen you were trying to open. So the screen conductor is completely active. It's the controller, the logical controller of these other screens. So it's the one who's doing the direction.
And how different is that from app to app? Meaning, do you think, you know, like, and I remember when we were in PMP, we'd always have these struggles of, and you've talked about it in the Build Your Own Cab series of, you know, it's one thing to build this kind of uber generic system. It's another to build, you know, very specific things. I'm hearing somebody typing, something specific, you know, for an app. What's your take on that with regards to this screen conductor stuff? Do you think that there's like one approach that works really well for a whole series of applications? Or would you kind of say, hey, this is the build your own cab thing. You need to look at what your organizational needs are and invest some time to build the pieces that are appropriate.
I think you know that my opinion is, since I have a framework where I've implemented some of this, I think there's actually
you're biased.
I am biased. I do think that there is a good amount of these simple pieces, such as the notion of something that, you know, has this can shut down and this activate and this deactivate, maybe an initialize method. I've seen this pattern solve a lot of problems on a number of applications, really just making things quite a bit simpler when you implemented it that in that fashion. Well, I typically have a very base interface, and then I have other interfaces that may be implemented for more advanced type of scenarios. The other thing is, and this is something I think Jeremy would say, is it's really not hard to build this stuff from scratch. This particular piece is actually, there's nothing to it, really. I mean, I practically stole it out of Jeremy's build your own cab stuff, you know, and then put my own spin on it. But it's really simple. I think it's important for people to understand how it works and the types of problems it's meant to solve. And if they want to use a framework, so be it. If not, it's very easy to actually build, you know, a couple of these simple pieces.
Is it really? Oh, sorry.
Okay. So I'm going to disagree with Rob, largely. The roles, the screen conductor and the screen activator roles, I've seen reoccur on, I think, about 10 different projects. But the shape of the screen activator has been relatively different from app to app. Sometimes I've had to have logic on entry of a screen. Sometimes I've had to have extra activate, deactivate, dispose. The shape of the patterns and the actual implementation of the patterns I see varying across applications. And moreover, you want them to vary across applications. So I do agree with Rob that it's relatively simple to build this infrastructure if you understand the patterns. And my argument and fight with cab has always been that by trying to create this generic one-size-fits-all application framework, you create something that fits nobody, no application well.
Would it be fair to say that the spirit of screen activator and the spirit of coordinator are present in a large majority of applications, but that the exact shape of those interfaces varies?
That's exactly how I feel it is. The roles, the general interactions reoccur, but the shape of it, as you said, is very different.
Yeah, I was going to chime in and say that's exactly right. At least at this state of our development, I think it's really great that we can communicate to people that these roles and that these sort of sequences happen. But I'm not ready to lock into any particular implementation of that. And one example of that is it's sort of another actor in the whole scheme that we've talked about somewhat. Which sometimes goes by the name of screen subject, just to use Jeremy's term. You know, applications differ a lot in how they communicate about what screen it is that they want to see next. And what kind of content do you have to provide to the thing that you're about to build so that it actually knows what it should display? And that's not going to be the same from application to application. So, you know, in some cases it can be as simple as I want screen X. And in other cases, it's I want you to show me the trade for this particular stock and please show me all of the other stuff that goes with it. So many of these pieces vary from application to application. It's best if at this stage we lay out the actors and how they talk to each other and then see how it plays.
That concludes part one. Please come back for part two.